Nobody is ever satisfied with one. So we're back for a second hour of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show.
Michael takes it on his backhand. Forehand pass. Hanifin scores!
From the Finley Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at lvsportsnetwork.com, here is Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Hour number two of the VGK Insider Show rolling along here on a Friday. And the VGK Insider Show is brought to you by the Dollar Loan Center, where your first loan is on us. Apply for free at don'tbebroke.com. Take it up to $5,000. And as Darren Millard would say, Chapman, what are we going to do?
Sticks down and drop the puck.
An hour late. But hey, I'm here, aren't I? You don't have that drop?
No,
are you serious?
I do.
No?
I have it. I have it. I just got to find it. Where is Patrick Laine? Patrick.
This is why you have too many drops on the computer.
There we go.
I'm here, aren't I?
So six down. I'm here, aren't I? Drop the puck on hour number two of the VGK Insider Show. We got a nice game last night between the Dallas Stars and the Edmonton Oilers. It was kind of what I was expecting. I thought Dallas would control play a little bit more, just in terms of, you know, establishing a forecheck and really making it tough on the Edmonton Oilers. I was impressed by Edmonton throughout the majority of that game, just their ability to be composed. They never really seemed rattled. And, you know, they built themselves a nice two-goal lead, and then turnovers plague the Oilers, as has happened multiple times here in the postseason. So just kind of before we get into great observations, and this is one of my new favorite things to do.
Great observation.
I want to get your take. Yeah, I want to get your take, Chapman, on Game 1 of the Western Conference Final, a double overtime thriller with the Edmonton Oilers winning 3-2 on a Connor McDavid double OT goal.
It was a really good game. Two teams that that played, I thought, about as well as they could have. It was entertaining. It was intense. I mean, I've tried to explain to my wife that, you know, because she's still relatively new to the sport, and when we watch these playoff games, and full credit to her, because even if the Golden Knights aren't playing, she'll sit and watch games with me. But there's nothing like overtime hockey in the playoffs, because all it takes is one mistake, one goofy bounce, one kind of letdown, one incredible shot, and the game is over. And you're one step closer to not achieving the ultimate goal. So playoff hockey, playoff baseball, to me, when you get into extra innings, like, there's just nothing like it. I mean, at least with baseball, if you give up a run in extra innings, you have an opportunity to come back and score. Hockey, you give up that one goal, you're done. Like, it's over. There's no second chance. And I think that's what really separates the Stanley Cup playoffs from everything. Like, it's the best. And last night was a big reason why it's the best of the playoffs.
Did Game 1 change your opinion on how you think this series is going to go?
No. No, not a bit.
You're not more impressed by the Oilers?
I thought they played a good game. But yeah. I still think Dallas is the better team. I think Dallas will end up winning the series. I didn't think Edmonton was going to get the floor mopped with them. Like, I thought they'd have some fight, and I thought they would win a game or two. I just don't think they're going to win over seven.
So to your point yesterday when we were talking about special teams, the Dallas Stars committed just one penalty in that game. They had five power play opportunities, unable to score. The big one, obviously, was the double minor to Connor McDavid at the beginning of overtime. number one, I don't understand. Okay, like, so that play was weird because it was clear as day, blatant high stick, very much reminiscent of what Connor McDavid did to Quinn Hughes in the last round. That one goes uncalled. And this one went uncalled for at least 12 seconds. And then once it became apparent, linesman jumped in explained to the referees what happened. The double minor was called. Connor McDavid absolutely is beside himself.
He lost his mind.
What I don't understand is, okay, listen, if you're upset that it wasn't called a penalty in the first place, I get that. I do. I understand. I empathize with that. But at the end of the day, Connor, you high-sticked Matt Duchene right in the face. He's bleeding from his mouth. Like, you can only be so mad that you got a penalty called on you. This right here is why the Edmonton Oilers are unlikable. This right here is why the Edmonton Oilers are a tough watch for a lot of people outside of Edmonton. You've got Connor McDavid, the best player in the world, complaining about a blatant penalty that he committed as if he's exempt from the rules.
Yeah, it was, and you and I were texting during that whole episode, and like, first of all, the complaints, like the whining, if it's a borderline penalty and it's overtime, I understand that. Like, I can totally see it both ways in that situation. But it was a clear-cut penalty, and it's exactly why the four-minute penalty exists. The guy's bleeding from his mouth. He's going back to the locker room. Yeah. He comes back out to show the ref that he's bleeding from his mouth. Right. And then he goes back to the locker room. So the whining, look, if you want to be mad that it wasn't called right away, that's not why you should be mad. I mean, if anything, Dallas should have been mad that it wasn't called right away. Because I don't understand why it wasn't called to begin with. Like, the ref is literally right behind the play at center ice as it happens. Like, I get wanting to win, but the crybaby stuff, I can't get on board with that. I'm not a fan of that. And, you know, I guess, you know, Oiler fans will say, oh, it was poetic that he scored the winning goal. And, you know, I don't think that's poetic. Yeah. But, look, at the end of the day, Edmonton got through that, and they ended up winning the game. And in their mind, that's all that matters.
So it's funny because it's a four-minute power play, and to that point in the game, Dallas really didn't have much going on with the man advantage. They had failed on three previous attempts. They didn't really generate a lot. There wasn't a lot of movement. And it's funny because their best power play of the game was on that double minor. Jason Robertson hit not one, but two posts. He went long post on the first shot, short side on the second shot. Can you explain to me, and I've been like thinking about this for a while now, Jason Robertson on two consecutive shots beat Stuart Skinner. And I'm saying he beat Stuart Skinner because, as according to Leon, post is not good goaltending. So it's not like Stuart Skinner was doing anything to make it harder on Jason Robertson. Jason Robertson beat him. He just unfortunately hit the post because post is not good goaltending. If you want it both ways, you can't have it, Leon, not on this program. So the fact of the matter is, if you had on consecutive shots Jason Robertson beating Stuart Skinner, why in the world did Jason Robertson not take another shot on that power play?
Yeah, that's confusing to me. I mean, I'll get into it in my three things I saw, but that it's a real head scratcher. I can't explain it. I mean, first of all, you're so close to winning it twice on that power play.
Yeah.
And to not go back to the well, I mean, he's maybe your best player on the power play. One of them for sure.
Every single shot on goal from that point forward should have been
Jason Robertson.
Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah. Get it to him. Feed him the puck.
Yeah, okay. So let's get into it. Great observations. Great observations from game number one between the Edmonton Oilers and the Dallas Stars, Western Conference Final. So I'm going to start off because this is going to be one that I think surprises a lot of people. Is Stuart Skinner back? Question mark? Like, I get it's funny to drag Stuart Skinner. I get that when you lose your starting job for a couple of games in the second round to Calvin Pickard, people are going to say, there's no way you're going to get it back. And I don't even know what back means for Stuart Skinner, right? Because I'm just talking about like above 900 save percentage, like league average goaltending. That's what I'm looking for. That's an improvement for Stuart in the postseason. But when you look at the last three games, more often than not, he's been that. Like, he's been pretty good in Game 6, Game 7, and here in Game 1. I think Game 1 was probably his best performance top to bottom. He had two games out of the three where he's above a 930 save percentage, and I set the bar, quite frankly, at like greater than 900. And I got to give him credit, right? Credit where credit's due. Stuart Skinner showed a lot of mental toughness, a lot of mental fortitude to get benched, because that's what it is. He was scratched for Calvin Pickard, a guy that wasn't even in the league at the beginning of the year. He was an AHL journeyman for a lot of time. And Calvin Pickard came in and gave you a win when you needed one, when Stuart Skinner couldn't get you one. And he comes back into the lineup, and he's been good. I don't know how long it's going to last. I don't know if it can last for another round. I don't know if it can last for two rounds. I don't know if Stuart Skinner's at the beginning of a heater that gets the Oilers a Stanley Cup. But I'm going to give Stuart Skinner all the credit in the world for standing in the pocket, improving his game, and delivering some performances for the Oilers where he's done his job. He has given them a chance to win, and last night he out-dueled Jake Oettinger.
Great observation.
I mean, look, you got exactly what you wanted from him and what you were hoping for after he was benched. So I agree. Look, we'll see. We'll see how long it lasts. But, yeah, he was the better goalie last night, and a big reason why Edmonton won that game. I'll say this. This is my first observation. The Dallas Stars played their best game one of the playoffs last night. Look, they've lost game one in all three rounds, and it hasn't hampered them. It's what they do. They seem to lose game one. But I thought last night was the best game one that they've played in the playoffs. And we kind of talked about it in the build-up to this. You were about 3 inches away from winning that game about a minute into overtime. Mm-hmm. Jason Robertson's first shot, yep. I mean, he probably puts that in 7 of 10 times. Maybe more. And he beat Stuart Skinner. He beat him again. Both times just came up a couple of inches short. Dallas was that close to winning that game. And I would make the argument they probably didn't deserve to win that game. And they found a way in the third period to tie it. I think we expected them to kind of have a little bit, I don't want to say rust, but they had a long time off. And Edmonton coming off an emotional Game 7, a Game 7 win against another Canadian team that's in your division. There was a lot of push and shove in that series between them and Edmonton, or them and Vancouver. So Edmonton was going to – I figured they were going to play a good game. I wasn't expecting Dallas to play a good game, because it just hasn't been their MO in Game 1s to be a good team. But they played, I think, their best game one of the playoffs last night, and – you know, like I said, they were really close to stealing that one, and I think game two they're going to be better. I think they'll find their game, and I think they'll prove why they're the better team in game two.
Great observation.
Hit it.
Oh, it's there.
All right, so this is and I had this as kind of an addendum, but the Stars should just elect to forfeit game one. Like, they're just wasting everyone's time. We know they're going to lose already. Okay. This one's going to be spicy. I don't mean it to be spicy. I can't actually believe that I'm saying it, but it needs to be said. I know Roope Hintz is getting close. I understand that when Roope Hintz is healthy and available, he's going into the lineup for the Dallas Stars. It then begs the question, who do you pull out of the lineup for Dallas when Roope Hintz is healthy? I think it's time. And I don't think it's ever going to happen. Let me just preface it by saying that. But I think it's time Joe Pavelski sits for the Dallas Stars. listen, I like Joe Pavelski. I know there's no love lost for Joe Pavelski here in this audience, but I really like Joe Pavelski. He's got a goal and 4 points in 14 playoff games, and he's in your top six. It's just not feasible anymore for Pavelski to be in the lineup night in and night out. He just looks physically a step behind, maybe two steps behind in every scenario. Like, there are times where he seems unsure of what to do with the puck. I have watched Joe Pavelski have three steps on a defender on a breakaway and somehow managed to turn that into no shots on goal and two defenders back to defend that breakaway. I love Pavelski. I do. I really do. But I think he is hindering the Dallas Stars more than he's helping them.
You know, I said on this show yesterday that Joe Pavelski was going to have a one of those games where you're like, oh yeah, he's still there, but you may be onto something, and I think Leon agrees with you.
Great observation.
Thanks, Leon.
I think this one's really obvious. The Dallas Stars need Roope Hintz back. Look, he didn't have the season that he had in 2023, but he's still a really good player. And I know I mentioned yesterday that I thought that they would be able to handle that a little bit better than Edmonton would if they were without Adam Henrique for any length of time in the series, and I still believe that. But Roope Hintz is a big key to the Dallas Stars, and they're a big key to that power play. And you mentioned how good Edmonton has been on the kill in the playoffs. You mentioned how good they were yesterday on the kill. Roope Hintz helps you in that. If your Dallas helps you on the power play, it's an area where I think they're going to need to find some success, because Edmonton is going to have more than one power play in game two. It's just the way it is. The law of averages says they're going to have more than one. The law of averages with that team says they're going to score. So if you're Dallas, you're going to need to find ways to score on the power play. And I think having Roope Hintz in the lineup will certainly help you. I don't really feel like it's that bold of a take, but I think it's a pretty obvious one and one that needs to be said.
Great observation.
Yeah, I think you're right on the money there. Like, Roope Hintz is a very important player for the Dallas Stars, and they absolutely need him back and contributing in a meaningful way. Okay, so I talked about how perplexing it was that Jason Robertson didn't take every single shot after beating Stuart Skinner twice, but not the post, not good goaltending. But really, has Connor McDavid had a more defining moment than the game winner in double overtime in the postseason? I don't pretend to know every big moment that Connor McDavid has had in the playoffs. I know he's had some bigger than others, but when it comes to delivering the Oilers' first win in this era in the conference final, and it's your captain that makes the play, it's your captain that delivers you the victory, in terms of moments in Connor McDavid's career, once he's going to remember goals that will stand out to him, my guess is the double overtime winner is going to be that one, especially in the context of what overtime was for McDavid. We already alluded to it. We already talked about it. The double minor to start overtime really put Edmonton back on their heels. And you don't want your captain doing that, let alone one of the best players, if not the best player in the world, in McDavid. But it happened, and they almost lost the game because of it. And then, in overtime, McDavid, wide open in front of the net, he's got all day, and he just funnels a puck right into the paddle of a down-and-out Jake Oettinger. At that moment, it felt like, as bad as the Stars have been and their track record has been in game one of series, it almost felt like, well, of course, if Dallas is going to finally win a game one of a series, it's going to be against the Oilers. Surely, if McDavid didn't score there, the Dallas Stars are going to find a way to win this game. Surely Tyler Seguin is going to complete the hat trick, because that's the type of season it has been for the Dallas Stars. And McDavid said no. It was an excellent play from Evan Bouchard. It was a great deflection from Connor McDavid. But the fact that it was McDavid that delivered that game winner, that's important for Edmonton in their belief that they're going to be able to win this series and eventually win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I mean, that it certainly was. I think that was his playoff moment. And like I said, Leon is definitely going to agree with you on that one.
Great observation.
I just like playing that.
Great observation.
So, it's my favorite. It's awesome.
This is another very obvious one. But Jake Oettinger can't be outplayed by Stuart Skinner. Like, you will lose the series if Stuart Skinner is better than Jake Oettinger. And I think to add to that, I don't know the goalie position well enough, but it's my thinking that Jake Oettinger was out of position on that game-winning goal, and it seemed like he was leaning way to the left with McDavid right there in the middle of the ice, and there was just no way he was going to be able to get back over. But the Stars kind of lost Connor McDavid on that play, too. It's like you've got two guys down there. I'm not sure how you leave Connor McDavid alone in the center of the ice. But that being said, Jake Oettinger really, he didn't have a good game. I think the second goal they gave up was again, it seemed like a breakdown, but it seemed like it was a play that maybe Jake should have come up with. He can't be worse than Stuart Skinner, because if Stuart Skinner outplays Jake Oettinger, the Dallas Stars are going home. And I don't think I need to say any more than that, but I think that's another pretty obvious one there.
Great observation.
Hit it. So I'm going to give you a bonus one. And it's in light of the fact that Zach Hyman scored last night. Okay. A couple of days ago, we talked about the Conn Smythe, right? We talked about players that have won the Conn Smythe after they had lost in a Stanley Cup final, and the fact that there were four goaltenders that did it and one skater that did it, and that skater happened to be Reggie Leach. And it makes sense, because the year that Leach won it, he scored 19 goals in the playoffs. 19 goals in the playoffs. And if I'm remembering correctly, I think he did it in 16 games. So this is the observation that I'm throwing to you. And you can agree, you can disagree. It's really kind of open to interpretation. Zach Hyman right now has 12 goals in 13 playoff games. The record is Reggie Leach and Jari Kurri, 19 goals in a playoffs. I believe wholeheartedly that Zach Hyman might score 20 goals in the playoffs. I wholeheartedly believe that this Edmonton Oilers team, if there's ever going to be a team that's going to produce a player that scores 20 in the playoffs, it's going to be this version of the Edmonton Oilers. I think there's a very real possibility, truly, that we see that record fall and that we have our first ever 20-goal scorer in the postseason.
That's pretty incredible if you think about it, that there's only two guys who have done that. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's no shock that Jari Kurri is one.
Yeah.
You know, Reggie Leach a little before my time, so it's an incredible record. Look, Zach Hyman having a great playoffs, there's no doubt about that. And certainly who you play with helps. It would be something to see. I think Edmonton would need to win this series for that to happen. But it would really be incredible to see a guy get to 20 goals in the playoffs. I mean, it's so, and I don't think it's the guy that you would have expected.
Mm-hmm. So think about it from this perspective, right? Like, you have potentially 13 more games if you're Zach Hyman, right?
My gosh.
Like, you have at least 6 more games in this series that you can work with. If the Oilers make it to the Stanley Cup final, then that resets the downs for you. Like, there's a legitimate possibility that this happens. And of course, I'm with you. Like, I don't think it happens in this series. I think that for Zach Hyman or anybody else in the Edmonton Oilers, like, don't discount Leon Draisaitl. He's got 9 goals. Like, there's an opportunity that multiple players can get there for this Oilers team, which is ridiculous, but it's true. If they win and go on to the Stanley Cup final, we are talking about a 20-goal scorer in the playoffs. I wholeheartedly believe that. I really do.
Yeah, that's one where you almost wonder if they get to a point where they win this series and he's close and they get up in the Stanley Cup final and he's maybe sitting on like 18 and maybe they're up 3-0 in a series or 3-1 in a series. How hard do they try for him to get that record? Like, I don't know if that becomes a distraction. And I don't
that's like the ultimate situation, right? Like, where you've got a guy that you want to see have it's like an individual accolade, but you're chasing the ultimate team prize.
Yeah.
Like, do you start passing up shots just to feed Zach Hyman, and that ends up losing you the Stanley Cup?
Oh, could you
that
imagine?
Would be fascinating to watch.
They're up 3 yeah. games to 1, and he's on 18, and they lose 3 straight, and he doesn't have any, but they keep trying to get him the 19th and 20th.
That'd be hilarious.
It would be hysterical. I don't think they would do that.
Like, you want to talk – no. But you want to talk about the most Edmonton Oiler way of losing a Stanley Cup? It would be that.
It would be up there.
It would be the individual getting in front of the team.
Up there, yeah, with drafting 100%. Neil Yakupov.
Well, okay. Let's not get into that. We have an update. No, Matt Rempe did not score. Vincent Trocheck opened the scoring for the New York Rangers. It's 1-0 New York. 15:48 left in the first period. And after Trocheck scored, all hell broke loose. Like, Matthew Tkachuk tackled Trocheck. I don't recall who it was, but maybe it was Aaron Ekblad. Went after Alexi Lafreniere. Like, there's some bad blood. And it was the Panthers initiating it. So if the goal with Matt Rempe coming into the lineup was to instill fear in the Florida Panthers to shy away from the physical stuff, I don't think they got the memo.
No, that didn't work. Now we'll see if they hold on to the lead. And they got that early goal, like we said they needed. So maybe Rangers on their way to a game 2 win.
There's a lot of hockey left to go.
Yeah,
in this
like
one.
55 minutes.
All right, we'll take a break. Come back with we'll take a break. Come back with one timers next on the VGK Insider Show.
Carlson left corner, centered, one-timer, score!
It's time for One-Timers. A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery.
One-Timers, brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery. News and notes from around the National Hockey League, and this is just a fun game for me now. It's Rempe Watch. 2 shifts. 1 minute and 31 seconds of ice time so far for Matt Rempe. He has 3 hits, no shots, no attempted shots, no missed shots, no giveaways, no takeaways, no block shots, but 3 hits. There it is.
He's
That's all he got.
Making an impact.
Matt Rempe.
Making an impact.
Listen, the Rangers scored a goal, so clearly the change to Rempe was a masterful adjustment made by Peter Laviolette. Now, with that being said, the Rangers ended up getting a power play out of that scuffle after Vincent Trocheck's goal. They did not score on the power play. That is 0-for-3 now in the series, the New York Rangers, and just 1 power play goal in their last 13 opportunities. Something to keep an eye on as we get deeper and deeper into the Eastern Conference Final. And I'll be doing that along with Matt Rempe Watch. Okay, so this is one that I wasn't really expecting to hit, but it did, and it's interesting. Don Waddell resigns as Carolina Hurricanes general manager. Eric Tolsky named the interim GM. Tolsky has served as the assistant general manager since 2020. The Hurricanes will begin a search for a new full-time general manager. Waddell's contract was set to expire, and he had been given permission to speak with other teams. He met and interviewed with Columbus on Thursday and then informed Carolina that he felt like it was probably time for him to move on. So I guess the overarching theme here for me is, like, Don Waddell's in a pretty good spot in Carolina, right? Like, president, general manager. He can kind of paint with a different brush when it comes to the UFAs and what he wants to do in this scenario with a Carolina team that's still very good. Like, the bones are really strong and solid there. Why do you think, like, the job in Columbus is more attractive for Waddell than what he's done in Carolina?
Well, maybe because he wants to build something new. Maybe he sees the writing on the wall with Carolina. Maybe he feels that they won't be able to get over the hump. I don't know. I think for a lot of these guys, they like the challenge. They're very competitive guys. I don't necessarily know if Columbus is more attractive, but if you're a guy who wants to build something from the ground up, certainly that would be a good spot to do it. I mean, they've got some good building blocks, but they're a long, long ways away from being good. I'll say this about Waddell, and it's like, you could not have gotten a better parting gift from Don Waddell if you are the Carolina Hurricanes and their fans, because he did lock up Rod Brind'Amour before he stepped down today. So that's important, I think, because if you would have lost Don Waddell and Rod Brind'Amour would have hit, I mean, let's call it free agency in July, that could have been a really bad start to the offseason for Carolina. And I think what is going to be a very, very important summer for them, obviously, re-signing Jake Guentzel is going to be a priority. So this is a team that has some things that they're going to have to get done in the summer. Tara Vinen, I think, is a UFA. So it's and look, you still need to find a goalie. So it's going to be an interesting summer for them, and they're going to have to do it maybe with an interim general manager.
Okay, so here's what I think is really interesting. Pierre LeBrun with The Athletic reported earlier today that contract extensions are, at least there's talks between Jake Guentzel, Brady Shea, and the Carolina Hurricanes. Like, if you're Guentzel, how do you sell yourself on Carolina in this situation where you've got a general manager who built a really solid team, right? Who's built a team that has been in the mix for 7 years, and he walks away? Like, to me, there has to be something there. You don't just walk away from a really good scenario, a good spot. Maybe it's just to challenge yourself. Maybe it's you've been here for 7 years, you haven't gotten the job done, it's time to move on. Maybe that's an aspect of it. Maybe it's just a different, unique challenge. Maybe that's what's going on here. But, like, if I'm Jake Guentzel, and maybe it's different for Brady Shea because he's been there for a little bit longer than Guentzel has. He kind of knows the direction that this team can go. But if I'm Jake Guentzel, I feel like this kind of throws a wrench into whatever feelings I had about Carolina.
Well, let me throw this conspiracy theory out at you. What if there's friction between him and Tom Dundon, the owner of the team? What if Don Waddell wanted to make changes at the coaching position and Dundon kind of held him to the fire and said, no, I want Rod Brind'Amour to be the coach of the team? Look, I don't know that,
so,
but it's not.
I feel like
realm
it would be less about coaching. I think it'd be less about coaching.
Maybe they
more
have
about
separate,
roster.
Different visions, right? Like maybe Brind'Amour and Waddell have different visions for the team that they want to build. Like, there could be something going on there that we don't know about. And listen, if there's anything I've learned in 7 years of covering the NHL, it's that we're not going to know about it. But
there's a lot we don't know about, yeah.
Yeah, so I wouldn't put it past anyone to say that maybe there's just differences in philosophy with Brind'Amour.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because Pierre LeBrun also kind of threw some little breadcrumbs out there about, you know, some of the potential trades that might have been on the table for Carolina. Like, we all remember the heat that was dialed up on Elias Pettersson to sign his contract. Otherwise, he was going to be traded to the Carolina Hurricanes. Well, one of the names that was reportedly in that deal was Martin Natchez. The same, apparently, Martin Natchez on the block there for a potential trade with Linus Ullmark. Number one, if you're Natchez, like, you can't be feeling great about yourself right now because it really does feel like that's the player that you're kind of dangling out there to try to bring in something that can help you. And number two, like, if you could have gotten Linus Ullmark for Martin Natchez, I know how good he is. I do. But you need a goalie. Like, for I don't know why that trade didn't happen or what the case might have been in that scenario, but how much different does Carolina's season look if they've got Linus Ullmark?
They might still be playing.
And so, like, clearly those were things that were worked through, that were bandied about, that were on the table. And if there was a an inability to pull them off from the Hurricane side of things, then maybe it makes the news on Don Waddell a little bit easier to digest and understand. So that's the most up-to-date information that we have on the Carolina Hurricanes. Now, let's go from Carolina to the Winnipeg Jets. The promoted associate coach Scott Arneil to full-time head coach. He is going to be the guy that takes over for Rick Bowness, who retired from coaching in the National Hockey League. You at all surprised by this, like, that Winnipeg didn't go with an outside hire, that they went with Scott Arneil?
No, it doesn't surprise me that they keep it in the house. They seem like, of all the organizations that keep things in the house, they seem like the most likely in the NHL to do so. Yeah. Like, I think having been there, it's a special place for the people who are from there. It means a lot for the people who are part of that organization to remain part of that organization. So I think it's not a shock that they would bring in the assistant to be the guy who takes over. Look, he probably knows the philosophy, and I don't know, but was he the guy who filled in as basically the head while Bonus was out?
Yes.
So that
yes.
makes even more sense then, because it seems like if you're going to hire a guy, you want to hire a guy who obviously knows the players, knows the team, has some experience coaching that team. And look, they played pretty well when Rick Bowness was out. So maybe the Winnipeg Jets saw something in Arneil, and they feel like he could take them to the second round of the playoffs. And because they're a good team and they've got really good players. I don't know if I look at Rick Bowness and blame him for what transpired in the postseason. I just think they had problems in the place that you wouldn't expect them to have problems. But for them, it seems like maybe you just you take a chance here. And I mean, I don't know anything really about Arneil, but I wish him luck. I hope he does well.
So, just an update on the game between the Florida Panthers and the New York Rangers. Dmitry Kulikov, a high hit on Barclay Goodrow, called a major, reviewed, reduced to a minor. So the New York Rangers are on the power play for the second time here in the first period. About 50 seconds left on the man advantage, and they have had trouble getting set up in the zone. So we'll keep an eye on that.
Kulikov, a guy who's got a little edge to him. He's been in
as
trouble.
As does
before.
every player on the Florida Panthers has edge to him.
Yeah, Kulikov, though, he was a guy who, like, found himself in trouble earlier in the year for a dirty hit.
Okay, listen. This is what the Florida Panthers are doing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Look, like I said,
I recognize I don't
have a problem with it.
No, I recognize that they're losing the game. I get it. I understand it. I do. But the Florida Panthers are coming out in this first period, and they are making a statement to the Rangers. If you think putting Matt Rempe in the lineup is going to intimidate us, think again. They have been the more aggressive team when it comes to hitting. And granted, they've had the puck a little bit less. That's part of it too. But the Florida Panthers have essentially told the Rangers, if your change is Matt Rempe, we'll goon it up until you don't want to have him in the lineup. That's what they're saying. And it's a team that is so comfortable in what they are and how they have to play that they can take a period to try to establish that dominance on the physicality side. That's what they're doing.
Yeah, I think
clear as day.
If they go into this period or into the locker room down 1-0, I don't think they view it as any big deal. Like, I don't
know, because they're chasing hits.
Yeah.
Like, they're gooning it up.
I don't think Paul Maurice is going to go in the locker room and say, "Guys, stop hitting. Let's get to hockey." Like, 1-0 for them. I think they're probably quite all right with that.
Yeah. Have you thought any more about Sheldon Keefe in terms of getting the head coaching job in New Jersey? Like, do you like it? Do you feel like this is the right move for the Devils? Do you think that just bringing in Sheldon Keefe makes them a playoff team? Or do they need more C goaltending?
Well, I'll preface by saying that I'm indifferent towards the hire because he certainly wasn't my first choice. I really wanted Craig Berube, and I don't know if they really realistically had a shot at getting Craig Berube, especially once a Toronto job became available. But
yeah,
I think Keefe is, you know, he's not a bad coach. Like, I think they'll be okay. I think they'll make the playoffs next year. They had some injuries early on. Jack Hughes was banged up multiple times. I think they attempted to address the goalie situation. I don't know if Jake Allen is the guy who's going to lead you anywhere. I like Jake. I think he's a good regular season goalie. I just don't know if he's a Stanley Cup winning goalie. Always will beg the question, why didn't you go out and get a goalie early in the season when you knew that there were problems and you just allowed the ship to sink and then you blame Lindy Ruff for it? Like, I'm still disappointed with Tom Fitzgerald for that, because Lindy Ruff is a good guy. And I hated to see him lose his job the way it happened. I'm glad he landed on his feet, but like, there's some dysfunction there. And I don't think it was coaching. I think it was at the general manager position, because you knew you had problems at the goalie position. You failed to address them. You gave Lindy the contract extension late into the summer. You had Andrew Brunette on the bench, who I think is a really good NHL coach. You let him go to Nashville, and then you fire Lindy three quarters of the way into the season when it was already clear you weren't going to make the playoffs. It was clear what the issues were. He was the scapegoat for your failure to go out and address the goalie situation. I don't know if Sheldon Keefe changes that.
Chapman, he's got 212 wins in 349 games.
Yeah, like I said, he
Sheldon Keefe is a great coach.
And he's done it largely without a goalie.
Yeah. So in that regard, like, I think it's an upgrade. I really do. And there'll be more structure to their game. I think it's the right move. I think he's the right hire. I think he makes a lot of sense. Those are your one-timers for today, Friday. Whatever day it is.
May 24th.
We're back with Catching Up with Chapman next.
All right, Ryan. Well, three-day weekend for us. We'll be back on Tuesday. But, you know, just want to say to everyone, have a safe Memorial Day weekend. Don't drink and drive. Be good. Don't do anything stupid like that. And, you know, remember why we have Memorial Day and what it's for and what it means. And, you know, I'm not a rah-rah, you know, guy, but my father was a vet. Memorial Day means something to me. So just think about it a little bit maybe this weekend, why we have Memorial Day and like I said, what it means for us. And be safe. Be safe this weekend, and we'll talk to you on Tuesday.
That's great stuff there from Chris Chapman. I agree 100%. Enjoy your weekend. Remember why we get this weekend. And we'll talk to you all on Tuesday.